What is the difference between Bush Freedom and the regular kind? To help us answer this question today is one of the country's harshest critics of government policy. Because of his cruel tactic of using direct quotes of politicians and endlessly footnoted documentation to prove their incompetence and dishonesty, his work has been denounced publicly by the director of the FBI, the Secretary of Agriculture, Commerce, Housing and Urban Development, the Postmaster General, the chiefs of the DEA, FEMA, the International Trade Commission, and many congressmen and senators. His books include Lost Rights, Freedom in Chains, The Fair Trade Fraud, Feeling Your Pain, Terrorism and Tyranny, which won the Lysander Spooner Award for Best Book on Liberty 2003, and his latest, The Bush Betrayal. It is my privilege to introduce to you James Bovard. Welcome to the show, sir. Hello, James. Are you on the air? Oh, no, I bet his mic is turned down and the producer ran away.
Okay.
Hey, there he is. James, can you hear me now?
It's coming through fine.
All right. James Bovard, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's good to be on with you again. It's good to catch up with you again after Atlanta.
Yeah. Man, congratulations on a great book, Jim. This thing is absolutely, you know, I actually took a little note here. I said, if you have, what did I write down here? If you have a great need to feel exasperated in your life, read The Bush Betrayal. It's a great read. It's as funny as it is disturbing, but there are times where you have to just put this book down and try to convince yourself that it just ain't true.
But I certainly try to get comic relief in there, and you know, it's so important for people to see all the things, to get a sense of how broad the misconduct and the misgovernment is, because it's not just one or two things. Government's abusing our rights and wasting our tax dollars across the board.
Across the board on every issue. That's what I was telling the producer the last hour, that I knew that we had been betrayed, but I had no idea the depth of the betrayal. I thought I knew, but wow. So, Mr. Bovard, please tell us, what is the difference between Bush Freedom and the regular kind?
Well, Bush Freedom is something that people are supposed to be trained to get on a silver platter from the government. Bush Freedom is something which supposedly happens when checks and balances on the president's power are destroyed or ignored. Bush Freedom is something which happens when the president is allowed to start foreign wars on false charges and have over 1,000 Americans get killed over there based on his crusade to spread freedom, which is really difficult for the people who are being bombed to understand. Bush Freedom is based on the idea that the government is morally superior to the people, and therefore you have things like the AmeriCorps program. We have all these guys and young women and gray shirts and gray hats walking around doing good deeds like they're some kind of, you know, some kind of holy men and women. There are so many different ways that the government is deceiving the American people.
All right. Hang tight right there. We'll be right back with James Bovard on the Weekend Interview Show. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton. The website is weekendinterviewshow.com. If you want to listen to the archives, that's where they are, weekendinterviewshow.com. My guest is Jim Bovard. We're talking about his new book, The Bush Betrayal, and his website is jimbovard.com, and you can also read what he writes at fff.org. That's the Future of Freedom Foundation. All right, welcome back to the show there, Jim.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Appreciate that.
Sure thing. Now, your book begins, the first chapter is called Canonization and Cover-Up, about the effect on the American psyche, basically, of the September 11th attack and the way the Bush government went about manipulating that attack for their own advantage. Why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Well, it was fascinating. You know, 9/11 was the biggest intelligence and law enforcement failure in this country since Pearl Harbor. And yet Bush and his team exploited it so well that within weeks after 9/11, the number of Americans who trusted the government to do the right thing most of the time more than doubled. It was as if the government's failure was so catastrophic that it proved the government was infallible. And Bush and others made a lot of false statements in the days after 9/11, claiming that the U.S. government had not had any warning, that the U.S. was a blindsided innocent victim, that it was, you know, that there was no way to know that these terrorists might use, use airplanes as a way of launching attacks. Well, it turned out that almost all their claims after, right after 9/11, were false. And there was an intentional effort to mislead the American people. In many ways, there was also an effort to frighten the American people, to frighten them, to keep them subdued, so that Bush and Ashcroft could railroad the Patriot Act through Congress. You know, it's funny. I mean, the members, every member of Congress took an oath to uphold the Constitution, but very few of them had the courage to even speak out against the unconstitutional parts of the Patriot Act. Congressman Ron Paul, your previous guest, was a hero at that time. He was very outspoken, and he voted against the Patriot Act, one of only three Republicans to oppose the Bush administration on that.
Only one senator voted against it, right?
Senator Feingold of Wisconsin. He showed a lot of courage. And, you know, Feingold not only voted against it, but he also led a very courageous floor fight. And he was under intense pressure from Tom Daschle and the other Democrats and, of course, Bush and the Republicans to raise the white flag. But, you know, he was tough. But it was fascinating how, you know, that there was this huge debacle on 9/11, and the Bush administration basically turned it into a moral Dunkirk. Bush exploited people's grief and fear to add new fetters to American citizens, to empower federal agents to intrude deeper into our lives, and to seek to change the permanent balance of power between the federal government and the American people.
Absolutely, and we can get more into the federal police power stuff, but I want to go now into Afghanistan. Dr. Paul, the previous guest, said that the resolution he voted for authorized the president to go after whoever it was that did September 11th, but he complained that Bush immediately took it too far and conflated al-Qaeda with the Taliban and went around overthrowing regimes and nation building. So I figure we ought to get into Afghanistan here. According to your book, the president of the United States has said that the Taliban were the most barbaric regime in history.
Yep. I mean, you know, something which I did do the research for this book is I tried to read all of Bush's speeches and interview transcripts. And, it definitely turned me into a heavy beer drinker. But,
yeah.
But that's the upside. But it was fascinating to see how casual Bush's lies were. And, you know, it was only 4 years ago that so many people thought that that by getting rid of Bill Clinton that America would have honest government. And it just, you know, it makes me grin to think of how hopeful folks were of that. But, you know, it was fascinating how George Bush and his team and Karl Rove and others tried to portray what had happened in Afghanistan. I mean, Bush decided to invade it because the Taliban had offered a refuge to the to al-Qaeda. But as soon as the U.S. troops were in there, all of a sudden the story changed. And all of a sudden George Bush became the first president to attack and overthrow a foreign government because of its elementary school policies.
Yeah. Well, and about those, little girls and women have much more opportunity in the new Afghanistan, don't they, Jeff?
Well, they've certainly got a better chance to be raped. I mean, the Taliban were a terrible government and very oppressive and backward and barbaric, but they did have a semblance of order, if not law. Whereas since the Taliban have been toppled, there's a much greater crime problem. It's much more dangerous for women to go out, to step out. But, you know, it was fascinating that Bush, in the speeches he gave in early 2002, kept talking about little girls going to school in Afghanistan. I mean, that was probably the single image that he brought up most. And he was always trying to, trying to paint the U.S. effort in these very bleeding heart colors. You know, but the fact was that the U.S. bombed the crap out of parts of that country, and we killed a lot of innocent people. But it doesn't matter because there was an increase in the number of girls who went to school.
Right. And the fact that there's still Taliban everywhere, and the president of Afghanistan is really nothing but the mayor of Kabul, all that notwithstanding, we're just not supposed to pay attention to those particulars. Is that right?
Right. And you know, this is typical of how George Bush is governing. I mean, it's one big lie after another. I mean, it was George Bush. It was hyping the recent presidential election in Afghanistan like it's almost as if it had waved a magic wand over the entire country. But the fact is that the warlords and the Taliban continue to control most of the country. There was massive election fraud there, probably even worse than what we saw in Florida a few years ago. And yet Bush, you know, Bush is counting on the ignorance of the American people to get himself four more years of ruling them.
The BBC reported on, I believe, the 24th of September that the tribal leaders were going around telling people, vote Karzai, we'll burn your house down. And that when Karzai was asked about it, he said, oh, come on, and refused to even denounce that.
Yeah, I heard something about that. I mean,
I like that so much, I made a bumper sticker out of it. Vote Karzai, we'll burn your house down.
Oh, that's great. Well, it should sell well there in Austin, or it should sell well in Texas. I mean, you might need to change the name or two, but I guess Texas is a pretty safe state for George W.
Though he's from Connecticut, and he's not from here at all.
I think I can understand the Dixie Chicks.
Oh, man. So, John Kerry, I hate to give him any credit, but he sure did bust George Bush's chops about the number of poppy plants being grown in Afghanistan these days, didn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was nice that Kerry got a few things right. That was one of them. Going back to in late 2001, at the time the U.S. was invading Afghanistan, Bush talked about how the Taliban government and al-Qaeda, the evil ones, he called them, use heroin traffic in order to fund their murder, and one of our objectives is to make sure that Afghanistan is never used for that purpose again. Well, you know, the folks in Afghanistan have seen the Bush boom in opium production, because it's perhaps the biggest, sharpest increase in world history from year to year, a 2,000% plus increase in the amount of opium being produced in Afghanistan after that occurred after the Taliban got kicked out, totally out of control. But it seems to be one of the few things that's really booming there. Some of Bush's people want the U.S. military to go around and be stomping out the plants and suppressing it. But that's a good recipe for civil war. It would accomplish nothing except probably boost the amount of opium grown in Burma.
Right. Yeah, and raise the price.
Well, it'd be bad for the Europeans since that's where almost all the opium produced in Afghanistan goes, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's just one more episode of the good versus evil theme line that George Bush uses for almost everything.
Yeah, well, and speaking of good versus evil, we ought to talk about Iraq here, although the vast majority of your book is about domestic things, and I want to spend hopefully most of the time on that, although we're nearing halfway through already. But I want to touch on Iraq really quickly here.
Uh-huh.
Your Iraq chapter just has quote after quote after quote about how certain our government was that there were giant storehouses full of chemical weapons, unmanned aerial vehicles, mobile biological weapons, laboratories. What am I leaving out here? Nuclear program.
Yeah. I think that's a big one. But, yeah, it's just, you know, it's fascinating going back and reading Bush's speeches on these things. And Bush was so, you know, there are some people who say that, well, George Bush was given false information, so therefore he was not lying to the American people. But if you look at what he said since, it turned out that he had to realize that his charges were false. I mean, all he's done is change his story and change it about once or twice a month. And not only that, but Bush is basically treated as a joke. Bush gave a talk to the Radio and Television Correspondents Dinner in Washington back in March, and Bush put on a slideshow entitled the White House Election Year Album, and there was a series of slides that showed George Bush crawling around on his knees, checking behind a curtain and moving the chairs in the Oval Office, and Bush commented to the radio and TV people there that those weapons of mass destruction have got to be here somewhere. Nope, don't have any weapons over there. Maybe under here. You know, it was all a big joke. There were over 600 American soldiers dead at that point. And Bush was standing there before the Washington media establishment, and they were sharing a good joke about that. But, you know, but for the parents in Texas and elsewhere across the country whose kids are over there, whose kids are coming back in wooden boxes, it isn't a laughing matter.
Well, and he still says sometimes when he changes his story back, I heard him, I guess, at least in the last month and a half or so, say, hey, look, he refused to disarm.
Yes.
And he's still saying that.
Yes, it is simply, I mean, you know, What I'd be curious about is if Karl Rove and other campaign planners have done a very careful calibration of the ignorance of the American people, and that they are basing, you know, and that they know exactly where that line of ignorance is, where it'll be profitable to tell lies to.
Yep. All right, everybody. We're talking with the author of The Bush Betrayal, James Bovard, on the Weekend Interview Show. We'll be right back. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. The guest is a great author and a very kind man whose friendship I acquired at the Libertarian Convention in Atlanta, Georgia, last May. His latest book is The Bush Betrayal. His name is James Bovard. You can read what he writes at jimbovard.com or fff.org. Now, the chapter in this book that was... Well, it's hard to pick out which was the most frustrating, Jim, really, but
okay.
The one about the No Child Left Behind Act just absolutely killed me. You know, I watched the third debate, and George Bush basically, no matter what the question was, went back to No Child Left Behind over and over and over again, because we all know that's his greatest success in life. And to read your chapter on No Child Left Behind was... I don't know. I won't really call it heartbreaking, because it's not like I ever really expected very much from them in the first place, but it sure is a frustrating example of how government really operates, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and it's fascinating how much BS Bush and his reelection campaign are getting away with on this, because it seems as if the only thing that Senator Kerry is challenging him on is that he hasn't wasted enough federal dollars on it, you know, that they should have spent another $28 billion or whatever, but Bush has sharply increased federal education spending. And, in many states, this federal act, this federal intrusion has resulted in the states slashing their education standard. It's happened in New York. It's happened in Michigan. It's happened, many other states. And yet people don't talk about that. And also, it seems as if op-ed editors don't want to have any articles on it, but that's a different story.
Well, and I think probably part of that is just, you know, it's kind of complicated, and you have to, you know, write a whole chapter about it to really get the facts straight, right?
Well, yeah, I guess if someone, it doesn't seem that complicated unless, well, okay, parts of it are complicated, but, you know, but Bush and his Rod Page's education secretary have tromped around the country and claimed that this federal act raises standards for all children. And there's overwhelming evidence that that's false. I mean, there's a lot of reports about how standards have been cut, that it's almost a domino effect and knocking down expectations, because it makes it easier to show the average annual progress, which the law mandates that all schools show for all groups. But
how exactly does that work? That the states are given a mandate for the test scores need to be at least this, but then they lower their standards for what counts as that grade, is that right?
Yeah, well, the thing that's the key to No Child Left Behind is adequate yearly progress. You know, it's over a 12-year period, and by the year 2014, it's necessary for all students to be able to achieve a grade level, which is basically means passing minimal competency reading and math tests. But the thing that No Child Left Behind does is let states set the starting line wherever they please. And so states that set a lower starting line are going to have a much easier time showing adequate yearly progress.
Didn't the Republicans used to want to abolish the Department of Education?
I think that was before they found no, I won't make a crude joke like that. Yes, I mean it was in 1980. It was a major plank of Ronald Reagan's first election campaign. There was also talk about in the contract with America that the GOP ran for Congress in 1994. I don't recall the Contract for America called for abolishing the Education Department. Maybe they'd already thrown in the towel on that by that point. But this is the perfect example of how the grand old party stands for simply more federal power at this point. More federal power and more BS from Washington, because for Bush to be strutting around talking about how this, you know, about how No Child Left Behind had solved the problem of public schools, you know, If George Bush said that in court testimony, Bush could be prosecuted for perjury. But since he's only telling a debate watched by 50 million people, it's okay.
Right. Well, and you wrote in your book that the purpose was never to help kids. The purpose was that if they could create this program and keep it from becoming a laughingstock until after this November 2nd, then it's accomplished what its purpose was in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, there are there are lots of folks that have agonized, well, does Bush really intend to do this, or does he really care about that? But if you look at how they've done this program in so many ways, Bush talks about the having a deadline of 2014 for all children being able to read and do math at grade level. The real deadline for this program is November 2nd, this coming November 2nd. I mean, assuming that No Child Left Behind is not a complete laughingstock at that point, this law will be a success for Bush. And so far, it looks like it's not going to be a laughingstock. I mean, it's appalling that the Democrats have not gone after the absurdities of this law, but it may be that the Democrats are avoiding criticizing it simply because the Democrats are aware that Kerry may soon be president, and then it's going to be their boondoggle, and it's going to be their way to give billions of dollars to their friends and stuff like that.
Right. You know, I read your bio, Jim, and I thought, denounced by the head of housing and urban development, what? And then I read the book, and I figured out, oh, that's why they hate you so much, huh?
Well, yeah, that was Mr. Cisneros from San Antonio. He seemed to take exception about some stuff I wrote about rental subsidies back in 1994.
You wrote in your book that if somebody said, hey, everyone should be able to have a house regardless of their credit rating, that would be silly. But they say everyone should be able to have a house regardless of their race, and it makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah, it's very ugly.
All right. We're going out to break. We'll be right back with Jim Bovard, author of The Bush Betrayal.
I wear it for another 100,000 who have died, believing that we all were on their
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. The guest is James Bovard. He's the author of the book, The Bush Betrayal. And, boy, I'll tell you, the most surreal part of this book felt like I was falling through the picture glass or whatever they call it in Alice in Wonderland. The chapter on AmeriCorps. Remember AmeriCorps, Bill Clinton's marching into slavery together thing? Well, George Bush has only expanded it. And to read James Bovard tell it is literally like taking a dose of acid. It's insane. I really could not believe the crap that these people put out. It's absolutely surreal. Jim?
Well, I hope that chapter didn't make you cynical.
Oh, no. But not anywhere near it. Cynical? Me? No.
Well, I was worried. You know, it's interesting. A lot of people thought that Bush would bring a different spirit to Washington, to the federal government. But, you know, what he's done with AmeriCorps, the bogus paid volunteer program started by Clinton, Bush has made that much bigger. And now AmeriCorps members are busying themselves putting on puppet shows to persuade three-year-olds about the value of smoke alarms. AmeriCorps members are out there hoeing corn at tourist farms. And AmeriCorps members have busied themselves organizing pink prom dances for gay teenagers. It's interesting that... You know, it's interesting, especially that the federal government would be bankrolling that last activity, considering the national uproar about Senator Kennedy's comment about Cheney's daughter a few nights ago. But apparently, it's okay for the federal government to pay to have people doing that and organizing social events for gay teenagers. But it should be a federal crime for Kerry to mention in public about Cheney's daughter. So. But, you know, it's fascinating, you know, AmeriCorps is a great example of how folks simply don't look at government as what it is. People look at it through the moral light that the president casts a program in, and it doesn't matter that AmeriCorps is a prize boondoggle. Bush talks about, especially after 9/11, Bush talked about how he wanted to expand America so that all of us can become a September the 11th volunteer. I mean, this is such hogwash.
Oh, come on, Jim. He only wants 4,000 years of service out of you.
Ah, ah. You know, George Bush, I mean, I am really puzzled why some folks take him so seriously. But, you know, Bush, Bush, I think in the 2002 State of the Union address, suddenly announced that every American should give 4,000 hours of service for the rest of their, during the rest of their lives to some, you know, some abstract good for the good of the nation or whatever. And then Bush was going out this, was talking about this on speeches around the country, and in one speech he got carried away and said that people should do 4,000 years of service.
Yeah.
It was funny to see how the White House press office changed the speech transcript afterwards to try to cover up his, shall I say, misstatement.
Oh, well, you know, there was a story in the New York Times about a year ago or so, I guess, about how newspapers all around the country never do quote him directly. They always paraphrase, or if they have to use direct quotes, they go back and rewrite and take out the uhs and the dot, dot, dots and try to make it sound like English.
Interesting. Well, you know, something which is puzzling is that Bush is, you know, that America's got a chance to see Bush three times in these debates, and yet there's still a lot of people who think, wow, he's a great leader. I mean, it's just kind of like, you know, I guess maybe there's more drug abuse in this country than I thought.
Well, I don't know. I think most people probably using drugs at least can take advantage of their changed perspective to maybe kind of question, I would hope.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, it is fascinating that so many people are simply convinced that Bush is a great leader. I mean, you know, as I think I mentioned earlier, I'm not a John Kerry supporter. I think Kerry's an arrogant liberal in many ways.
How many books did you write bad about Bill Clinton?
Well, I had a book in 2000 called Feeling Your Pain, The Explosion and Abuse of Government Power in the Clinton-Gore Years. I also whacked the hades out of Clinton in Shakedown in 95 and Freedom and Chains in 99 and Lost Rights in 94.
There you go. So you've done more to bash Bill Clinton than the rest of us combined.
Well, I don't know about that because there's a lot of folks that did a lot of good bashing of Clinton out there, and some of it was accurate. But it's you know, it's so funny that so many of the folks who understood why Clinton is dangerous to America's freedoms seem to be incapable of understanding that George Bush poses many of the same dangers.
Well, and you know, to get back to this AmeriCorps thing for a second, the whole thing is based on the premise of moral collectivism that, you know, you ought to give something back as though everything that you have was not something that you earned. You know, without coercion, but that somehow everything you have is because everybody else gave it to you, and now you owe everybody else for your life.
Yeah, and it tends to be dripping with virtue, there is such an overwhelming piety to this program. Bush's comment about how people in a free society, quote, need to give something back. Bush is basically pretending that the government takes nothing from people when it only confiscates their paycheck. But there was a study 10 years ago by the Federal Office of Management and Budget that estimated that males born in this country between 1980 and 1992 are going to have to surrender over half of their lifetime earnings to the tax collectors. But from George Bush's view, that is, you know, that doesn't count. It's almost as if Bush also wants a pound of flesh.
It's his money in the first place. Whatever tax break we get, in fact, you know, this is something interesting. The Democrats are always saying, you know, well, we can't afford this tax cut. It's going to cost us this much money. And then Bush says, oh, come on. I believe that money belongs to the American people, and so I'm going to choose to give some of it back to them. It's only barely better than the Democrats' view of it, isn't it?
Yes, and it's something which is most aggravating with Bush's tax rhetoric, and the same with Kerry's tax rhetoric. I was really fascinated by that in the third debate because they were talking as if, it is as if the entire tax system is simply a fount of giveaways. George Bush was saying, and I gave you $1,000 for your child, and I gave you $1,000 or $100 if you're married, and I've given you this, and I've given you that. You know, it is as if the American people have forgotten that government spending is always going to cost them. It's going to cost them now, it's going to cost them later. And it's, you know, it's funny how much people have forgotten in the last 25 years because Ronald Reagan was able to campaign for president attacking deficit spending. Whereas now, folks just, you know, it's as if the government money is play money and there's no reason not to have more of it.
Yeah, which it sort of makes a joke out of the tax cuts when Bush takes all that credit for tax cuts, but then he's got $500 billion deficits every year. That money comes from somewhere.
Yeah, and you know, it's fascinating that a lot of the Bush supporters don't. You know, a lot of Bush supporters are probably would be very opposed to AmeriCorps because it wastes $500-600 million a year. But if you look at what we've already spent in Iraq, you know, it's well over $120-130 billion. That is greater than the nominal cost of the entire cost of building the interstate highway system in this country in the 1950s, 60s, and early 70s. And yet, we certainly haven't gotten the highway system out of bombing, you know, bombing the cities in Iraq. And the people in Iraq haven't gotten much out of it either.
When I was reading your, I forgot what it was called, but your section on the domestic police state, you have quite a bit of discussion in there about the TIPS program, total information awareness, carnivore that eats everybody's email, the CAPS II system for the airlines. And it reminded me of a book. Have you ever read a book called Technopoly by Neil Postman? Have you ever read
it? I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
He's the same guy that wrote Amusing Ourselves to Death.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I'd like to recommend that to you. It's a really great book, and I was reminded of it, especially when you're talking about the Total Information Awareness and the CAPS II program, where computers are left to decide whether somebody's dangerous or not. And so that if you're pulled aside as dangerous, well, sorry, sir, you know, you may be perfectly innocent, but the computer says, and all the responsibility is taken off of the individuals who are depriving you of your right to travel or whatever it may be.
Right, and, you know, and it's fascinating that there was so little critical scrutiny of CAPS II, the computer-assisted passenger pre-screening system the run by TSA. But if you look at how it worked, I mean, it would vacuum up information. It wanted to vacuum up information on people's on their home address, on their financial stuff, things like that. And one of the categories was meal preferences. The feds wanted to keep track of the meal preferences of everybody who flew in this country, as well as their home addresses. So what you would have is a national registry of everybody who asked for a kosher meal on an air flight in the U.S. You know, that's not really a good idea, I don't think. And it doesn't do anything to help us stop terrorism, but it's just a typical federal, half-witted notion that if the government vacuums up all this personal information, it's going to make us safe.
I can't imagine the possible relevance if you eat a falafel. Well, they don't even serve falafel on an airplane in America anywhere, do they?
Well, I mean,
how is that supposed to incriminate? Well, did you eat the steak or the fish?
Well, yeah, I was doing the research for the book, and once I read about this program, I made sure that I didn't ask for hummus when I was flying.
Yeah, you don't want to get pulled over and strip searched.
Well, and that, you know, that hummus, that's a real red flag these days, so you got to be careful.
I was absolutely shocked when I read this fact. I thought I knew how bad I'd been betrayed until I read this book. You write in here that since the Patriot Act, that the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act Court has had three times the number of warrants, has issued three times its usual number of warrants, and yet, or was it three times more than the regular judges? I'm sorry, I forgot. But it was something about how the FISA court is giving away warrants for regular criminal investigations all across the country, right?
Right. The numbers are last year the federal agents got three times more wiretap orders from the secret court, this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which is kind of a pseudo court, than they actually got from federal judges in criminal cases. So the thing that's happening is what the ACLU says is the Bush administration is using spy hunting tools to sidestep the basic protections that exist in criminal cases and undermine everybody's Fourth Amendment rights.
Yeah, and then still, they haven't gotten a single conviction, except the guys in Detroit that they had to let go because they were liars. And you're right that they still don't even have a real watch list of terrorist suspects.
Well, you know, yes. I mean, Ashcroft has had some very good press conferences, though.
Oh, some very expensive ones anyway.
True. But, I mean, you know, it is almost as if this is being scored simply for one PR charade after another. You know, and there are good federal agents out there that are working hard to try and protect Americans from the terrorist conspiracies that might be ongoing out there. But so much of what the feds have done, so much of the high-profile stuff, has turned out to be a kind of a half-wit circus here.
Well, at least George Bush is good for trade and business and stuff, right? The tax cuts, and he's a free trader, isn't he, Jim?
Well, he says he is, but if you look at what he did to steel, I mean, it's interesting, you know, it is interesting how so many folks are so are swayed that Bush is that Bush is dedicated to free enterprise, because if you look at what he's done, for instance, on Bush imposed high tariffs on steel imports back in 2002, even though the Bush administration knew that this would destroy thousands of American manufacturing jobs. It was simply because Bush wanted to snare the endorsement of the steel workers union. That was the primary motivation there, and it didn't matter how many American businesses were hurt or how many were bankrupted, because it sharply drove up steel prices. It caused a lot of shortages around the country of steel because it totally disrupted the international flow of steel, and it was never justified. I mean, Bush and his trade people did the circus shell games as far as the type of rationale which they claimed for this. But it was obvious, even before that they slapped on these high tariffs, that the problem was the inefficiency in U.S. steel production compared to our foreign competitors, not any kind of foreign unfair behavior.
And the effect that this had was it drove up the price of everything made out of steel in America, from cars to anything else, right?
Right, and by doing this, Bush undermined the competitiveness of dozens of other industries aside from steel, because I mean there's far more companies and industries in the U.S. that use steel than make steel, and by driving up the price and creating shortages of this basic input, Bush, you know, it's a domino effect where they screw dozens of other industries. But it doesn't matter because people don't pay attention to that, and George Bush gets to strut around acting like he's saved the steel workers and, had a great victory for fair trade.
Wonderful. And another thing in your book that you pay lots of attention to that I sure appreciate is the secrecy of this administration. Has it, in fact, been the most secretive administration in history?
I don't know if in history, but certainly in modern history, certainly since Nixon, I think. Nixon had some troubles with his taping system, but the Bush folks, if you had the same trouble now, if Bush faced the same challenge that Nixon faced with his tapes in the Oval Office, I'm sure they would never even get that far with Bush. Bush governs in many ways like a monarch. Bush acts like he should be above challenge, that there should be no checks upon his power, that people should not be in the streets protesting against him, or at least he should never see them, which is why the Secret Service goes through the places and often mandates the creation of free speech zones, which quarantine demonstrators. But on the secrecy, Bush acts as if the government, as if the executive branch is entitled to be, secret from the American people, that even Congress doesn't know, doesn't have the right to know what the government's doing.
Are you familiar with Robert Stinnett, the author of Day of Deceit, The Truth About FDR and Pearl Harbor?
I've heard of it. I've heard some good things about it. I have not read it.
Great book. Well, I interviewed him last year, and the book that he's working on now is a book about how FDR deliberately did not bomb the railroads that led to the death camps.
Uh-huh.
And he was doing research on that, and he said that the new Freedom of Information Act rules under George Bush and John Ashcroft have actually classified information from the 1940s. As he's going and trying to research our war against Nazi Germany, he's finding things that had been declassified are now reclassified from 60 years ago.
That doesn't make any sense. It's not like that the Nazis would find out what our war strategy is. but this is typical. I mean, the same thing has happened in a lot of areas. I've heard a lot of horror stories on this, on the Freedom of Information Act. There was the Transportation Security Administration has been among the most aggressive in pressuring newspapers to not print things that were already well known, or to leave names off of photographs of TSA agents or stuff like that, if memory serves me. And there are so many things like this that don't pass a laugh test, but people are not challenging the government. The media is not dogging them on this, and it's not an issue in the campaign.
Yeah, well, we're trying our best to make it an issue in the campaign right now. It's the weekend interview show on the Republic Broadcasting Network. The guest is James Bovard. He's the author of The Bush Betrayal. We'll be right back to wrap up the show. WeekendInterviewShow.com, JimBovard.com. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. If anybody you know still likes George Bush, I want you to go out and as fast as you can get a copy of The Bush Betrayal by Jim Bovard and stick it in their hands. They will be a Bush voter no longer, I promise. Jim Bovard is an awesome author. He writes for the Future of Freedom Foundation, FFF.org. You can also look him up at JimBovard.com. And he's written the books Lost Rights, Freedom in Chains, The Fair Trade Fraud, Feeling Your Pain, Terrorism and Tyranny, and, of course, his latest, The Bush Betrayal. Now, before I forget, we're finishing up on the secrecy topic here. I cannot believe, tell me this is not right, that Bush has granted hereditary executive privilege to, what, family members of the president or vice president?
Yeah, something which Bush did about less than 2 months after 9/11 was issue an executive order in which he basically gutted the Presidential Records Act. This was an act that Congress passed just after Watergate, a few years after Watergate, to make it clear that the American people owned the presidential papers are the property of the American people. Well, Bush gutted that. Bush issued an executive order which basically turned the law on its head. Congress kind of hemmed and hawed and pissed and moaned, but didn't really try to overturn it. There was a lawsuit which some docile federal judge, you know, signed off on what the Bush administration had done. But this is an absolute travesty. Bush is dropping an iron curtain around the records of the presidents, and this is a law which has automatically the non-classified papers of the president there's pressure to make them available 12 years after the president leaves office. This is something which Bush put in place partly to protect his own father's presidency and to protect a lot of his top aides who worked for his father as president.
Right. Well, and committed crimes during Iran-Contra.
Well, there were some legal problems, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now we're almost done here. So for the last topic, I'm sorry we didn't get to talk about the Farm Bill and the drug war.
Fine. That's fine.
And the neoconservatives, I wanted to ask you why I couldn't read about them anywhere in your book, but we'll have to save that for another time.
I covered
time.
Them in Terrorism and Tyranny. It's not like I ducked the issue.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you.
I never did get a copy of that one, man. I need to.
Well, I did do a radio show with you, and if memory serves you, well, no, anyhow.
Yeah, I think we talked about the neocons then, right?
Anyway,
the point is here is campaign finance and the war on dissent. That's how we need to end this interview today, Jim. You write that 98% of congressmen are reelected.
Which simply proves that our system is the best in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost as high as what they used to have for the Kremlin back in the Soviet times, you know.
Which only proved that the people of Russia really, really liked communism.
Yes, and I guess this would not be a good time for a joke about Mr. Tom DeLay there in Texas.
Oh, please, joke about Tom DeLay.
Well, I guess that's his idea of a perfect system as well, with the way that they've drawn the maps down there in Texas. I mean, it's really so brazen. But the same thing has happened across the country. You have incumbent politicians who meet and jigger the district lines, and they're always trying to protect each other's seats. And folks have very little effective choice when it comes to the choosing a congressman or a senator. And the same is true of presidents, of choosing a president. I mean, the choice we have is a few millionaire Yale graduates.
Yeah, exactly. And you quote the former Solicitor General saying, Congress is not handcuffed by the First Amendment.
Yes, this is Washington's attitude towards the Bill of Rights and to the American people. We got to keep an eye on these rascals.
All right, everybody, you heard it. This guy's name is James Bovard. Look him up, JimBovard.com and FFF.org. The book, The Bush Betrayal, is excellent. Everybody rush out and get it. Thank you so much, Jim Bovard, for coming on my show today.
Hey, Scott, thanks so much for having me on. It was a hoot.
All right, I'll talk to you soon, my friend.